Good morning. It is Monday, April the 20th. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means. And we are here to start another week. We're going to be dealing today with the OEIB. And Mr. Wilson, anything for the order?
Just so you understand, some encouragement, I would guess, that this is scheduled for 2 days, but if you get everything done, including public testimony, but I think everyone in the room is staff at this point, then you can have tomorrow off.
Oh.
There's nothing scheduled other than OEIB this tomorrow. So, and if Ms. Golden wants, or Dr. Golden wants to come to the table, that's fine. And I'll just open with a couple things. Please keep in mind that OEIB sunsets under current law in mid-March of 2016. So that's an issue, and Senator Roblin and others are working, have a task force or work group working on that issue. There's, of course, a bill associated with that sunset to extend it that the governor had proposed. Other issues, there is the ETIC, which is Engineering Technology, Industry Council funding. That's part of this budget. Currently, it was transferred there in the 2016 session. I think that's another issue that will need to be determined on where that is housed and how that is used. There's a statewide longitudinal data system being developed in conjunction with other agencies by OEIB, and the co-chair's budget does include about $6.4 million to continue their framework, to continue this at least to the end of the biennium. So they factored that in, but knowing that the decision would come later in session whether to extend the sunset or not.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and hopefully Dr. Golden or Senator Roblin would share with us maybe what the what Governor Brown's feelings are.
Yes, and we will be at some point making a decision about whether or not OEIB should be continued. We'll be making a decision about whether it should be continued in its current form or whether there should be some changes and modifications. So we would hope that, Nancy, you will speak to those questions today and give us some help. So,
thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you. Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nancy Golden, the Chief Education Officer. Today, we're here to talk about our agency-requested budget. And what you'll hear later from Bill McGee is that the majority of our budget does flow through either to educational entities or to our community partners. But we always have laser focus on our vision, so I want to talk a little bit about that vision. This has been adopted by the OEIB board, and it is to advise and support the building, implementation, and investment in a unified public education system for our youngest Oregonians through post-secondary students and provide boundless opportunities to support success. I really love the boundless opportunity piece of this vision. And it's not only boundless opportunities for our students, of course that's most important, but it's also for the educational entities and for our state agencies so we can be as coordinated as we possibly can be. So in order to meet this mission, we have three strategic budget strategies. The first one is to coordinate a seamless student-centered and equitable education system from birth through college and career. And people might say, well, what does that really mean? And I think the part we do that's really critical here is looking at the transition. So one thing we look at is age 3 to grade 3. And I think you all know about our Storytime campaign when we worked with our communities to help their students from the youngest children learn pre-literacy skills so they're ready for kindergarten. Another thing we've been really focused on is how do we have an articulated curriculum from age 3 through grade 3 so when children leave the preschool environment and come into the K-12 environment, the curriculum is seamless and the families feel as engaged in the K-12 as they were with the early learning. The other transition a course is what we refer to as the 11 through 14 transition. I think something that's happened recently really shows the importance of busting barriers along these transitions or making them smoother. And one example is the Smarter Balanced College Admission. This to me is a real victory because what that does, our students take that in grade 11, and then if they pass it, it can count for their placement test in college. What this does is reduce costs for our students. It gives them time to catch up in 12th grade if they find out they haven't met that benchmark yet. In addition to that, it would allow time in 12th grade to accelerate learning, get some college credits, and we believe ultimately it will reduce developmental ad. So that's strategy one.
Yes. Either you briefed the governor or she briefed you, because that sounds exactly like the speech she gave last week.
Well, Senator Monroe, we were really pleased to hear a number of things from the governor and thought she gave a fantastic State of the State speech.
Very pleased.
But she did talk about the importance of a seamless system of education, which is fundamentally what we do at OEIB, and also making sure that our students can have placements tests that really, like we like to say, move them along the pathway as seamlessly as possible. So we were very pleased. Strategy two is all about those targets we're trying to reach along the pathway so that we can get to 40-40-20. You've heard us talk about these. I'll just give you a few because we're talking about all of them later. But it is like Ready for Kindergarten is a key target, and reading proficiently by third grade. In addition to that, our strategy three is to build a statewide support system to position agencies and educational entities. And by educational entities, we're talking about our early learning programs, our K-12 programs, our districts, our community colleges, and our higher ed to improve student outcomes. And you might say, what does this look like in communities? And I think by now you've all begun to see the power in your communities of the regional achievement collaboratives, lots of energy there. The STEM hubs, lots of hands-on, beautiful teaching going on there and coordinating it, and early learning hubs to provide all those great services our youngest children need to be stable. So that's really our three major budget goals. And so, of course, it does take some staff to deliver on these goals. And so I want to talk a little bit about the staff at OEIB. We're a small but mighty staff of 15 people, and that includes a chief education officer, a chief of staff who currently is on rotation with the governor's office, 5 agency directors, one of them being a research and policy director who does have 3 other people working in that area because it does take a team to do that, and then we have 5 administrative support members. Now, the work we primarily do is creating the seamless system, focus on transition, bust barriers, apply research and best practice, and convene very large and diverse groups of people. So that takes people with a unique skill set to do that. So what we have on our team are people who are researchers, many of them are PhDs, people who are policymakers, educational leaders, have worked as superintendents, or district office administrators, or building administrators, people who really know how to facilitate, because that is critical with the convening. We know communicate is just key for our organization. So we have people with that expertise, and again, with the community engagement. So I think it's always good when you look at why does an organization exist to go back to why did we come to be? And so these are the things we must remember. There were persistent barriers to student learning. We don't want barriers. We want to bust those barriers. There were growing student opportunity gaps. We once and for all want to close that opportunity gap. There were entities who impact student successes who were working in silos. We want to make sure this is a coordinated and seamless system. So this next graphic really begins to show what we're really about in terms of student outcomes along a pathway to meet the 40-40-20 goal. Some of these key outcomes are stable and attached families, ready for kindergarten, reading proficiently by third grade, completing high school, and earning a college certificate or a post-secondary degree. And how do we make sure this is a seamless pathway? We do that by collaborating with partners, by recommending strategic initiatives or policies, making sure we're using research and best practice, empowered shared leadership, and community-based strategies such as I talked about before.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Dr. Golden, I finally figured out that 2025 is 10 years from now. Some of us, it takes a while before all the pieces connect. So at each one of these benchmark areas, there's probably, well, and I know Ben Cannon showed us several charts last week, but have you broken them down to, like, how many more ninth graders are going to need help, or how, you know, by those benchmark years, so we kind of have an idea of where we need to help students? And
so Rep Comp, Senator Monroe. Yes, I mean, I think what you're really talking about is, do we have data on how many of our students have already met those benchmarks and which students still need to meet those benchmarks?
Mm-hmm.
We do have that information. Currently, it takes us a bit of a time to get it because we don't have our longitudinal database yet. Part of the reason for the longitudinal database is to be able to get that very quickly, but we do have access to that information.
Just to follow up.
Go ahead. It looks like Mr. McGee wants to help you, too.
I went to use it.
No?
Okay. Oh, you're reading his mind.
Go
Thank
ahead,
you.
Madam Coach. Well, he kind of looked pensive. I thought maybe he wanted to jump in.
Oh, okay. Well, it's as we start making, as a committee here, as we start making budget decisions, it's helpful, or I know the data system struggles from way back, but when you and your team gives us recommendations, I'd like to see some of those connecting pieces, kind of the whys,
mm-hmm.
because that gives us a good understanding what outcomes are we really looking at, like that, the ninth grade transition. How many of those? Well, anyway, I think you get what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So we can also target our budget accordingly.
Using the data to make a case of how important it is.
Yes.
Absolutely, we can do that. So of course, this does take strategic leadership to do what we want to do. And the strategic leadership we're really looking at is in the four areas I've talked about before: building system capacity by busting barriers. And Rep Comp and I were talking on the phone Sunday about a barrier that prevents creating a diverse workforce. And there's many of them. And we want to make sure we build capacity by eliminating them. The second piece is really about our equity lens and make sure that any decision, any policy we make, we look at all of our students and we really focus on the students in the opportunity gap and what support it takes to make sure that they're successful along with all the other students. Again, leveraging community-driven solutions. I've talked about that before. And convening and ensuring that we're always elevating best practices or promising practices. So, I always say that we like to budget a plan, not plan a budget. And, you know, I think, well, I really think of this as making sure we keep the main thing is the main thing. And so we have some KPMs, proposed key performance measures, that are very much aligned with our work, and we actually take the KPMs very seriously. It helps guide us as we put together our accountability system for us internally. So I do want to read these for you. It's to increase the reading readiness for students entering kindergarten, increased the percentage of students not chronically absent in sixth grade and ninth grade. Now, that's where we're going to measure it. But we know in order to do that, it starts in the very beginning with our stable families. We want to increase the number of high schools offering college credit. And right now, I think we have about 100 who do not yet. And so that's very important. And we want to increase the number of systematic educational barriers that are identified and addressed. We have a few more. We also want to increase the percent of college and university graduates employed after 1 year. And we really think our CTE and STEM initiatives are really going to help us in getting there. We want to increase the percent of educators who are culturally and linguistically diverse, what you and I were talking about, Representative Comp. And we want to increase the number of stakeholders who rate the quality of the research and policy is great or excellent. We want our research and policy group to be available to legislators as you're thinking about what policies do you want to put in place. We want them to be available to all of our education entities as they're coming up with their improvement plans. And to increase the percentage of customers who rate our agency is great.
Representative Springer has a question.
Excellent.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As I look at increase the number of stakeholders who rate the quality of the research and policy services great or excellent, who are those stakeholders now? And who do you want to increase into that fold?
Well, the stakeholders are multiple audiences. Sometimes it's legislators. For example, we had a legislatively appointed committee around accelerated learning, and we worked a year. Representative Huffman was part of that group, and we often brought back the research or best practices or the models from across the state in helping us think about how to do that. Sometimes, as a legislator is concerned about something like absenteeism, or they'll ask us to start doing some research to help them think about what's the policy they want to put in place. And of course, from our early learning services to the K-12 services to community college to higher ed, we also are sometimes asked by them. Now, I have to say, four people can't do all of this on their own. Some of this is about networking with other groups. So sometimes it's the research we're actually doing. Sometimes it's a research a university partner is doing, but we help get it for who wants it. Sometimes it's Northwest Education Foundation's research, but we want to bring that to you. And I think you all had an example of that the last time I was in front of this committee, where I think one day you asked for information and the next day we brought you a bunch of briefs, research briefs. I know there were some on STEM, and I know there were some on the Eastern Promise and stuff like that. So it's also to answer those critical questions that legislators have at times like this.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then on the last bullet point, who are the customers? I can infer who I think the customers are, but I'd like to
hear
who those are.
I think the customers are primarily two groups. One are the educational agencies, so HEC, ODE, Early Learning Division, because we want to create to be as an efficient and seamless as state agencies as we possibly could be. The other, again, are the educational entities like the early learning providers, the K-12, the community college, and the higher ed. And I also think legislators are really important to us. I remember in 2011 when we were thinking about OEIB, that was one of the conversations that came up, how helpful it would be, some legislators said, if there's a place we could go to get information that would really help us when constituents come in and make a suggestion and things like that.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. We had a lengthy, good, very good, actually, presentation from Ben Cannon in the last couple of weeks. Is it part of your role, because as the Higher Education Coordinating Commission is getting up and really rolling in this past year, is it part of some of your staff's role to help Ben facilitate and help coordinate some of his actions, or how does that work?
Representative Cobb, Co-Chair Monroe, Yes, if they ask. I mean, the main thing we work with Ben is that transition from 11 through 14. So we actually had a small strategic plan about how are we going to work together around 11 through 14. The Smarter Balance is an example of that. But we also meet weekly as a team from Megan Irwin, Rob Saxton, Ben, and I, and the Chief of Staffs to really say it's all about the seamless system, and we're really a team, and whatever it takes, we do.
Thank you.
It's really critical.
One thing you said, you talked about equality of opportunity without respect to socioeconomic status, for example. And that's something that's troubled me for many years. For example, our battles to try and achieve all-day kindergarten when we found several districts charging tuition for the second half of the kindergarten day, which made it more accessible to high socioeconomic students than to those maybe that needed it the most. Another example is when we don't fund all of the Head Start eligible students, we only fund a portion of them, and we know that those programs can be especially valuable to what might be called culturally disadvantaged students. And then it also comes to the last 2 weeks we spent on HEC and on community college funding and so on, and we know that higher and higher tuition disenfranchises many students. So those are all things that we need to reverse if we're going to make education from birth to college equal for all Oregonians. I think that was a speech, not a question, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, Senator Monroe, co-chair Comp, I couldn't agree with you more, and I will say, and I know Senator Roblin has experienced this with me when we've been working on the work group around the reset for the OEIB, that the equity lens is something that universally people have appreciated. And we really have two things. When we talk about the equity lens, we are talking about issues related to race. But we also, poverty to prosperity is another really important thing for us. Both of them are critically important. And I was going to say something in the beginning, but do you remember that very first picture of the father at his graduation putting his graduation mortarboard on his child? And it's so true. When a parent, a family member graduates, then they're on track to help their children graduate. And I think it really speaks to everything you were talking about. That's why we really talk about the opportunity gap, the seamless system, busting barriers, and the equity lens, and making sure we're also focused on poverty to prosperity. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the agency budget summary. And basically, we're going to talk about some of the key initiatives we were responsible for in four key policy packages. In order to do this part of the presentation, I'm going to have help by three of our directors. The first one is Peter Trumba, the Research and Policy Director. Then he'll go back, and the STEM Director, Mark Lewis, will join me. And last, the Career and College Readiness Director, Hilda Roselli, will join me. So I'm going to turn it over to Peter.
Good morning, co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Peter Tromba, and I'm the Policy and Research Director for the Oregon Education Investment Board. Regional achievement collaboratives are one of OEIB's major initiatives to foster community-driven solutions to improve student outcomes. And we use a model at the OEIB, and actually it's popular across the state, that's known, actually across the nation, that's known as collective impact. In collective impact, different agencies have a common set of goals, and they have mutually reinforcing activities to reach those goals. And Collective Impact is designed to bring cross-sector partners together to develop shared and local vision for supporting students and families. Right now, the OEIB has supported the creation of 13 of these collaboratives, which span most of the counties across the state. And in a couple seconds, I'll show you a map to show how many counties are involved and the ones that we still need to get involved. Every RAC in the state brings together educational institutions, industry, healthcare, community, and culturally specific organizations and other sectors to collectively impact student outcomes like those Dr. Golden has identified. In particular, I'm just going to pick one to expound on. Attendance in sixth and ninth grade, and actually goes to the question that Rep. Comp asked about trajectories and projections for the future. Sixth grade and ninth grade attendance, as well as kinder attendance, but sixth and ninth grade are two we've picked, are very predictive of future success, not just in high school, but in college and career. Showing up is a big part of any of those things. Many of the regional achievement collaboratives focus on attendance as one of their mutual goals, because whether you're in healthcare, education, public safety, the Boys and Girls Club, or what have you, all of you have a piece in making sure that the kids in your community go to school. So that's one way we impact a goal like that. In each of these communities, all these agencies independently do great work. The magic is when they come together, they can leverage limited resources, maximize local social capital, and work together for the same goals. And this accomplishes more for students and families than any of these organizations could do alone. How do we support regional achievement collaboratives? Well, our main function is we're a backbone of support for the formation and sustenance for these organizations. And we work alongside local communities to reach the shared goals. And some of the other backbone supports involve giving data. Another question was from Rep. Sprenger about who are some of our constituents. The RACs are big-time consumers of our research data, both in terms of statewide research, but also, more importantly for them, local research in what's the workforce needs, what are the educational needs, what are the poverty situation, what is the situation with respect to opportunity gap, which are unique to each region in Oregon. The RACs have been asking us for that kind of support. And that allows them to apply the equity lens in their local context and then get professional and technical support from OEIB. Here's the map I previewed. The dark gray counties are the only counties in Oregon that are not currently covered by a regional achievement collaborative. So you'll see right now that we've covered a large percentage of the state. And there's individual stories for every single one of these regional achievement collaboratives that are worth hearing. They're really, really powerful, indicate how local folks can come together to make a difference. We just wanted to briefly highlight two of them. In Malheur County, the original RAC that's down, the RAC, which is called Poverty to Prosperity, started as a discussion between a shallot farmer and a construction worker about career technical education and making sure that the kids being prepared in the systems down there actually are going to get jobs and be connected to the local industry. And that has blossomed to a huge extent. There's a new pathway that's just been created in automated systems so that students getting career and technical certifications or community college certifications are ready to meet the local workforce needs at a new foods plant. So that's a great local solution. On the other end of the state, Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath counties, they've got another solution. What they did there is really interesting. They went out and to every single high school in the area and interviewed students to find out what their needs and interests were. And they were able to share all of that data about what was coming out of 16, 17, 18-year-olds' mouths and figure out how to support those students. And every one of those high schools were assigned a team and a liaison to work with connecting those students to existing community supports and services. So often what an opportunity gap is a lack of information. Some students have it, some don't, and that lack of information means there's a gap there. This is a regional approach to bringing that information to every student.
Peter, two of the most populous counties in Oregon, Washington and Clackamas County, don't have regional achievement collaboratives. Why?
Well, what I understand about this, the original genesis of the regional achievement collaboratives is they were really organic. So individual regions started to meet together, and at some point it was going on in enough places concurrent with OEIB's formation that the OEIB got some funding to help stimulate those existing collaboratives to get up to the level of Iraq, and they were given funding. We remain open at the OEIB. If there are interested folks in any of those counties who want to start Iraq, maybe we haven't heard, and maybe they're listening right now and they want to call us up. But honestly, we're ready and willing, if there's groups there, to come together to help support it. But the point of the RACs is it's not top-down. So it's actually, we believe, not our place to say you need to create one in Lake County. But as soon as the energy initiative is there, we're ready and waiting and willing.
Okay.
Any addition to that? Okay. Story time. This is our statewide reading campaign that Dr. Golden alluded to earlier. And it's the primary mechanism where the OEIB attempts to directly influence kindergarten readiness. So early learning has all kinds of programs going on. OEIB's contribution to this effort has to do with activating families and community in helping every child in Oregon become a proficient reader by third grade. This was created in collaboration with communities across Oregon. And Storytime showcases the easy ways that families can build literacy skills every day and everywhere for children across the state. And this campaign was piloted in 5 of the most culturally and linguistically diverse communities and was designed to combat barriers that families experience in helping their children build literacy skills. When you look at the incoming kindergarten data, and you look at the number of students who don't know the names of letters coming into kindergarten, you'll see that we need to bring all students up to a certain level of reading readiness. And one of the most amazing things about it, and that's why we have these 3 pictures, is you don't have to be a reading teacher to get your child ready for kindergarten. A lot of getting ready for kindergarten is about word play and familiarizing yourself in the language, and that can come from games and songs and all kinds of things that are not flashcards or reading instruction. The top and the bottom picture just exemplify that. In the top picture, it's in the kitchen. Kids are cooking with their mom. What a great time to play with language. You've got labels, you've got all kinds of ways to do it. In the bottom, you've got the dad playing sports with his young son. There's so many ways in sports and box scores and all kinds of things to get letters across in a context that kids will like. And then they'll start to know what all the letters are. You know, like I'm thinking about baseball, the different letters that get used. The middle one is really, really powerful. This is a picture from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. And it's designed to build awareness of oral storytelling, which is helping to build important literacy skills. And in this picture, a tribal member is addressing students at Willamina Elementary School, showing a popular tribal story. Language is about culture, and culture is really interesting. Stories are really interesting, and by emphasizing the importance of things which are naturally part of a student's culture, a family's culture, as reading readiness skills, we help to get students ready for kindergarten.
I remember my wife, who was a retired teacher and day school director, when our grandson was about 2, she would carry him around the house, and he would go, "What's that? What's that? What's that?" And she would explain those things to him. So that was that kind of activity, building language, that was going on. Pretty remarkable. She also told me about when I was on the school board in David Douglas, we instituted the teen parent program. We had a lot of girls that had had babies, and we wanted to keep them in school. And it was right across from the high school. And she worked in the teen parent program for a time. And she said she had one mother, and they were taking care of her kid, who didn't speak English. And this mother would sit down with Billy and get Billy to explain what was in the children's books. And she was learning the language from these children's books that were being read to the little kids. There's all kinds of ways that we can help people build language, and this is really exciting.
Thank you for that comment, Senator Monroe and Co-Chair Comp and the committee. I'd like to mention another research thing that we've been asked from the legislature this session is about, it's called two generational strategies. Dr. Golden referred to it on the first picture in the slideshow, and you've just referred to it there. It turns out there's a body of research that supports that simultaneously engaging with parents and students has a huge synergistic effect, whether it's reading or math or these other skills, when both generations are learning, it has payoff for both. Thank you for that comment.
The visitation program that we're hopefully funding does a lot of that. Teaches especially disadvantaged new parents how to do that kind of thing.
And then finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Research and Policy Center that Dr. Golden referred to. We are a group that really supports the work of the entire educational endeavor from preschool through post-secondary. And we're a small group, and often, as Dr. Golden referred to, we end up leveraging the work that's going on in other agencies. We work with PSU closely. We've got University of Oregon and OSU, so all of the major research universities in the state are partners of ours, as well as other groups that do research in Oregon. Whether on an official basis or an unofficial basis, we pair with them. I want to highlight that one fundamental component to our research approach that I believe is pretty significantly different is that we use the equity lens to ground our research. That really affects what we research, how we research it, and how we present our research as we discuss that research with different groups. And it doesn't only mean that we disaggregate the data that we show based on race, ethnicity, poverty, or what have you, but it also means we think about the language that we use, words like achievement gap versus opportunity gap, and what the research says about what's a better way to say it, which has a better effect on the system. And obviously you hear us talking opportunity gap is a lot of research. It's probably a better way to talk about things than achievement gap. This team also utilizes a variety of methods. So we do qualitative and quantitative research, and we evaluate one thing that we're using right now is called, just starting to use right now, is called social network analysis, really to measure how regional achievement collaboratives and other larger groups actually change over time for the better or the worse. And finally, I'll mention that the research and policy team is ready and willing and able to use our state longitudinal data system. Right now, we use a longitudinal data system that we've been given by the Oregon Department of Education. And we also use longitudinal data that's available nationwide. And we're really sharpening our skills for the day that the complete data system is done so we can use that in the most powerful way possible. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
I just have to say a big, huge thank you to Peter, because I think it's through your work and Doug Costi's and I don't know how many people over the last decade to look at that longitudinal data system, and to hear that you're actually using it's pretty exciting.
Rep. Comp and Co-Chair Monroe, I just want to clarify, we're using ODE's longitudinal
right.
database, and they're going to be giving their stuff to us, but haven't built ours yet, but we are using ODE's.
Well, and I understand that, and I know not necessarily that there's a competition to have a superior system, but go for it.
Thank you.
Rep. Comp, Senator Monroe, we're going to now talk about policy packages, and the first one is the removal of the OEIB sunset. What we're looking for, what I think you all know, that on March 15, 2016, that OEIB would sunset if we don't get a removal of the sunset, and that's the work we've been doing with Senator Roblin. So what's in this policy package is that we would need fund the agency operations through the remainder of the 2015-17. So it's only funded through March 15, 2016, because we didn't want to make assumptions until we really knew what was going on. So I hope from what we've said so far, you really see that the groundwork has been laid for a very powerful organization that can create the kind of seamlessness we've all been asking for. One thing that was really interesting in the work group we're doing around the reset of OEIB is Ozzie Rose is part of that group. And he gave us the history of legislation back from 1975. He is a historian. He is so valuable to us. And he showed us, he even said, the Legislative Assembly, ORS 348.705 to 348.890, in 1975 started working on this coordination and seamless system. And he gave us examples all along the way of attempts to do that. I think that's because it's critical for our students in order to go along the pathway and make sure all of them can graduate from high school, go on to college, or get a certificate that moves them right in to the world of work. We're constantly love to share examples of things we've been doing that's helping all of our students. And one that I really appreciate is what we're calling the shoreline. And what the shoreline's about is we know for students there's multiple ways to get to that end game. We have some students who are going to come through career technical education. They might then go on to a community college, get a certificate in less than a year, and go out into the world of work with the skills to come back if they want to, take a few more courses and go into STEM careers. But there's great careers in career technical education, and I say that because my husband was a printer and had a wonderful career for many, many years using as a career technical ed person. In addition to that, we know the GED is an option that needs to be available to many of our students. And what we've seen is it's been very uncoordinated how students get GEDs. There's some community organizations that offer it. There's some community college. But for the child, because we're really an organization who's there to look through the eyes of a child, oftentimes they don't know where to go to get their GED. They don't know where to get support that they need in order to pass it, and they don't know how to pay for it. So we're working on making all of those things a reality for our students. So the shoreline is just another example of the work we do through the eyes of the student. This is the last you'll be hearing from me, but this is what we believe is a chart that puts it all together. And so what you're going to see here is that the way we're reaching key outcomes along the pathway in the 40-40-20 is by creating that seamless system. Now, if you look over there, there's these little things that look like lightning. That is to be symbolic of the barriers along the pathway. And ultimately, we want no barriers, but there still are some. Instead, if you look over to the right, what you'll see is how we go about making the smooth pathway and eliminating the barriers. We always start with the equity lens, and then we convene. We convene whoever it takes to help us figure out what we need to do through the eyes of the children so they can move seamlessly. This could include our early learning providers, our community organizations, our culturally specific groups, our Oregon tribes, professional associations, K-12 partners, higher ed partners, and business. And this is all in service of the student, as you see in the middle of the circle. So on behalf of the student, we convene and we drive collective impact. We bust barriers and we amplify the assets that our organizations have, that our students have, that can together we can ensure our students reach the 40-40-20 goal. And we learn and we share promising practices.
Welcome.
Good morning, Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Lewis. I'm the Director of STEM Education for the OEIB and the Office of the Chief Education Officer. I'm going to be talking to you about two policy option packages this morning. This first one is $30 million associated with the Engineering Technology Industries Council. $24 million of that money will be flowing directly to the HEC to support their new revised allocation model. And then $6.1 million will be invested in increasing post-secondary degrees and credentials aligned to high-wage, high-demand industry needs. Currently, those industries are in the area of certainly the biomedical and health sciences, engineering and computer science, high-tech manufacturing, precision agriculture for food processing, mechatronics, and energy. The $6.1 million will be invested through an RFP process and will go to post-secondary institutions, not just universities, but community colleges as well, to really invest in program startup needs. The sustainable funding would be expected to come through the HEX revised allocation model. The second policy option package is associated with the support and continued support and expansion of regional STEM hubs and activities. The $7.9 million, and what I'll do is I'll show you a map on the next page so you'll see where they are. So it's kind of awkward to not have that map right here. But similar to the regional achievement collaboratives, STEM hubs are designed really to fuel economic prosperity for communities, for industry, and for individuals. We know that Oregon has thousands of high-wage, high-demand jobs, job openings that are really currently being filled by workers from out of state. Our economic growth will not just depend on filling those jobs, but also to creating new job opportunities through innovation in the STEM fields. And we know that those STEM jobs are really growing at 2 to 3 times faster than non-STEM jobs in Oregon. Hubs connect K-12, post-secondary, workforce and economic development, so our local workforce investment boards are involved in those STEM hubs, civic organizations, non-formal educators, to really take a comprehensive approach to improving the educational ecosystem.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Mark, I have a high interest in making sure that we have teachers at the high school and the community college level that are prepared and have the licensure to be the teachers these students need. Do you have any thoughts or feelings on that? I'm nothing like putting you on the spot, but I mean, do you see that as a high need? Again, I'm looking at spreading out what few budget dollars we have, and how can we best have the teaching field that we need.
Great. Representative Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. It's a critical need, particularly in some of the STEM fields. So we our educational attainment and success in mathematics and in science is, and particularly for our students of color, is quite abysmal when we look at the national rates of attainment for our students. And so it is absolutely essential for our system that we invest in teacher professional development, professional learning that helps educators not just look at the content but how it's applied so that they can really engage students in problems worth solving, in questions worth asking, in experiences worth having, that really helps them prepare for a very fluid and highly dynamic future. So yes, I think it's critical, and our STEM hubs, teacher professional development and connections to industry is a critical piece of those STEM hubs.
Thank you.
As is the equity lens. All of our STEM hubs are disaggregating data, looking at the data not just from issues of race and ethnicity, but also students of poverty, gender differences, and really working hard with, again, the educators, but the system as a whole, to attend to increasing support for our women and our students of color. Finally, we can't just support these regional efforts in isolation from each other. One of the whole notions of having a statewide network like this is to share promising practices amongst each other and to break down that isolation that exists in the system so that we can actually achieve the 40-40-20 and the OEIB outcomes. Here is a map of the currently funded STEM hubs. Those will be in the shades of green and shades of blue and a few in between. You'll see that there's six regional STEM hubs that we were able to fund this current biennium. We know that there are many other regions and communities out there who have expressed interest, particularly up in the Gorge, East Multnomah County, Lane County, and our friends down in the South as well. They're working very, very hard to foster those necessary relationships and conversations to be prepared for this next round of funding. Again, the hubs as well really are one of those critical ways of meeting some of our key performance measures as well as an agency, one of which is to ensure that we're increasing the percentage of college and university graduates who are employed within a year, as well as focusing on student engagement and making sure that, that students are engaged in meaningful activities that keep them on the pathway to success. Here's a couple of pictures that show our students who are engaged really in those hands-on, minds-on activities that really excite people about learning and keep them really begging for more, I think, all of the students that we see in those activities and the teachers as well. They're engaged and they understand that they're solving questions that are meaningful and real. Other aspects of our STEM hubs are really to focus on internships, externships, those connections with industry partnerships, as well as I previously mentioned, teacher professional development.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Co-chairs Compton, Monroe, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hilda Rosselli, and I serve as the Director for College and Career Readiness. And I'm here today to share with you Policy Option Package 104, which is another example of how OEIB convenes various stakeholders around key areas of improvement. This particular policy option package features a request to transfer from ODE to OEIB approximately $250,000 to continue work that we began in 2013 when we convened major representatives from major groups, including OEA, COSA, OSBA, and Chalkboard. What we were doing was partnering with the new Teacher Center, which has developed a very empirically based survey that is being used in about 8 or 9 other states, and it's designed to provide an anonymous survey vehicle to get at the perceptions of both teachers and administrators around the working conditions that are necessary to achieve student success. I'm delighted to share with you that the first administration of this survey for Oregon ever given had a tremendous response rate. We had 19,373 educators who took the survey, representing 62% of all of the schools that reached a 50% threshold benchmark. That's the only way that they could access their data, is if 50% or more of the educators responded. And what we know from that is that everyone recognizes the importance of teaching conditions. It's important for student learning because teachers are the major impetus to student learning. There are significant correlations between some of the factors measured on this survey related to teachers' time, leadership, their professional development, their support as new teachers, and the success that they have with students who ultimately achieve progress. We also know that it impacts teachers' retention and their desire to stay in the profession, which ultimately helps us reduce disruptions and save funding. So how are those results being used right now? We are using the results both in the schools and at the state level and district level to actually examine specific school and district data. And the groups are convening around development of potential strategies and areas for improvement. This brings that collaborative work right back to the core again when you bring teachers, administrators, and even community members together to talk about those results. And we're also using it as baseline data to document the impact of the OEIB strategic investments that you all passed during the last legislative session. What is next? We are planning to expand the advisory group that guides the implementation of this survey to add some additional items focused on equity and the conditions that we believe will support a more equitable environment for educators. And we will encourage districts to keep telling their stories about how they're using this and to use those stories on the Oregon Educator Network. What this would allow us to do is to plan for an even better response rate and to carry out the next administration of the survey in 2016. Thank you.
So, members of the committee, you know what they say, start with the end in mind. And so I just want to thank all of you for allowing us to come and present to you the Oregon Education Investment Board agency budget and some of our key initiatives. And now I'm going to turn it over to Bill to give you the budget-specific information.
Good morning, co-chairs, committee. Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. I'll apologize in advance if I go into paroxysms of coughing, but I'm getting over a cold, so we'll try to struggle through this hopefully fairly quickly. Just a quick review of the governor's budget for the OEIB for the next biennium. Again, the context you're familiar with, the 10-year plan to increase knowledge and skills of Oregonians, the statutory goal to reach 40-40-20 by 2025. Equity lens for the elimination of the opportunity gap, and then the OEI vision for a unified public education system. The components of the budget, you've heard most of these already. To remove the March 16th sunset, the governor proposed eliminating the sunset and continuing the agency in perpetuity. To reconfigure the ETIC engineering and technology industry funds that were transferred from the Oregon University system so that 80% will be transferred to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for distribution to the institutions to support engineering programs as it has currently been in the past. And 20%, about $6.1 million, would remain with the OEIB, as Mr. Lewis discussed, to increase STEM degrees and certificates. The other proposal was to provide funds to support and expand STEM hubs from 6 to 12 in the next biennium. And finally, the governor's budget included continuation of the statewide longitudinal database with funding that was in the Department of Education. History of the OEIB funding in 11-13, it had a small appropriation. It existed as part of the governor's office. 13-15, $21 million in current biennium, which includes half of the ETIC money that you transferred in the 2014 session. And then the 2015-17 governor's budget continued the agency, restored the funding after the sunset, and transferred a portion of the ETIC money and gave the STEM fund money. As Dr. Golden indicated, most of the money that comes to the agency goes out the door. $13.8 million of the governor's budget would go to STEM hubs or convenings, other partners at a local level. The actual operation of the agency is about $6.7 million, so it's a fairly smaller agency in that context. And finally, for the specific numbers, the removal of the OEIB sunset would restore $24 million and restore just under 10 FTE that would otherwise phase out in March of 2016. The reconfiguration of the ETIC funding sends $24.5 million over to HEC. It establishes additional position to help with STEM work within OEIB structure. $7.9 million for support of the STEM hubs. And then finally, the TEL survey that would be transferred from the Department of Education would be $250,000. In terms of the difference between the co-chair's budget and the governor's budget, at the time the co-chair's framework was presented, it did not comment on the sunset. Mr. Wilson indicated to you that there was funding in the co-chair's budget to continue OEIB through the biennium. The co-chairs indicated they would maintain strategic initiatives in the current biennium and current service level. And as you know, they identified $60 million for unspecified investments in early learning, early literacy, career and technical education, STEM, and other education needs. So that would be
presentation. There's our famous $60 million.
Yes.
I think we're done.
Is that it, Bill? Questions for Mr. McGee?
How to stretch $60 million into like $100 million?
Well, you know, it's read your Bible. It's the loaves and fishes.
Right. That's all about.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if it's for Bill or for Dr. Golden, but I have a question about the STEM hubs from the third slide in the DAS presentation, where it talks about expanding them from 6 to 12, but in the OEIB slides, there are only 4 additional ones that are identified. So I wonder.
We're going to let Mark Lewis answer that question.
Thank you very much, co-chairs, Representative Smith Warner. What we have seen indicated is the interest of about 5 or 6 communities that may be at a state of readiness to benefit from additional funding. We're not certain precisely, who will apply at this moment, but we do know that there's activity in those various things. So this is the upward end of that estimate.
If I may follow up briefly.
Follow up.
Thank you. So the 4 that are listed in the OEIB slides are ones that we already know and then that are kind of maybe further down the path, and then there's a couple more is the thought.
Yes, in that slide there's actually 5, but they're co-joined in one section, so they look like a single entity.
Thank you.
Okay. So, no?
That was.
Anybody else? Nancy, is that it?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. With that, we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5022, the OEIB Board, and call on Mr. Joel Fisher.
It
Mr. Fisher got lost.
Thank you for your text.
Someone's looking for him.
Yeah. He was there just a moment ago.
Yeah, he was.
We're at ease for a moment.
And I also wanted to talk to you about the
judiciary. Who did what?
I like getting marine.
Senator Roblin?
Yeah, and I guess we could, just because this is a good time for a public hearing, and talk a little bit about the work group that's been working on what we see as the reformation. I think Nancy has said it better about how we're looking at moving forward with the OEIB. And I'll just give a few, and if Nancy wants to say a few words, she can talk about it a little as well. And there's other people sitting in the community that come to all the meetings, so there's a lot of us here. I think what the group has come to the conclusion is that we really we're not certain about certain things. The board is one of them, and how it was formed and what it should be. And so in that particular case, we've been working with the governor's office, and we have come up with a solution that allows the governor to do an executive order for the next little while, kind of forming the board so we can see how that would work. But we would extend, right now the conversation is about a 4-year sunset on the agency itself, so we will keep it going. I would contend that probably the most consistent statement was around the equity issue, and that this is the first one, and then the other information that Ozzy brought about the history of we've always gone back to doing this since 1976. It's been another commission or another group that's been formed by the legislature to try to figure out how to do this coordination, and we think that if we were to just sunset it, it would pop up again. And we'll just keep doing it. We'll keep in reinventing. And right now what we want to do is to get it to work, not necessarily keep reinventing. And so with Nancy's help and with 40 other groups, some of whom were for it, some of whom were against it, who have come together, we've kind of come up with a basic deal. We'll have an amendment out pretty soon. We are moving. We moved the bills to the Rules Committee because we hadn't got the amendments quite right. And OEIB had recommended in some previous other legislation to do away with certain initiatives, to do some other kinds of things, and so we put them all together so that we wouldn't walk over each other when at the end of the, and you have to have all the conforming legislation. We thought it might be nice to conform it ahead of time so people know what they're going to actually get to vote on. We, I think, are clear that another thing that happened is that the achievement compacts have kind of are going to sense that because the action was not taken on this on the House side for the bill that would have ensured them. We had a long conversation about the fact that the school districts are already doing that with their own stuff. There continues to be some conversation about the university system and the higher ed saying, yeah, we kind of like this because we didn't have that kind of thing before. So we're still having that ongoing conversation as well. So it's how do we form an agency who has the distinct job of convening groups amongst all of the other agencies so that we break the barriers, do the things you just heard, and what does that really look like? And that's been an ongoing conversation. And I will tell you that of the 42 people that come, not one of them has stayed silent. They all have their opinions about how that goes, and that's been a really positive experience from my perspective with respect to they've been all kind of coming to the same place about what we agree on, with the understanding that there will be parts of it that we put off until the next session as we have a bigger conversation about the whole education endeavor.
And since the sunset is
next year,
March of next year, we will have a short session prior to that.
Correct. And we hope to remove the sunset with respect to the agency, keep the other
or your back. Extension on the agency, but not on the board.
Correct. And an experiment on the board next year that is basically the governor kind of comes up with what they think, and then we'll have a conversation about that before the next
one. Because
there's
been a lot of suggestions on how you could change the makeup of the board.
Exactly. And we had that same conversation, and we did not come to an agreement.
Yeah. You want to kick in?
Yeah, co-chairs, and first of all, I really do want to recognize Senator Roblin. He's just done a masterful job, I think, in bringing together all the really important stakeholders and being able to hear what they want and make sure we don't give up on coordination. It's too critical for our students, so I really do appreciate that. The other thing, what he was talking about is the achievement compacts. I think even the OEIB recognized that the way they were initially implemented were not the way we should go forward because they weren't attached to school improvement plans. So districts and universities would have to set goals, but then it wasn't attached to a consolidated district plan or what Senator Roblin's talking about. Higher ed often has different people come and look at their universities, accreditation sort of things, and it wasn't connected. So I think that what's really critical to this committee is the targets. They all believe in, like, ready for kindergarten, reading by third grade, elimination of chronic absenteeism, ninth grade on track, 3 college credits in high school, college being accessible and affordable. But they really see that attached to the 40-40-20 vision, and those key outcomes are what we're all going to galvanize around, and that we have data, like you were talking about, Representative Comp, that we're really clear where we're at, and then we work with legislators and all of the other educational entities and the research to say what's going to get us to the next level. I think all the agencies want to be accountable to that. We need to be accountable to that. So I would tell you honestly, OEIB is feeling very good about the direction. Whenever you start anything new, now remember this was just 2011, and it took a while to get going. You do figure out that some of the things you thought would work, and some don't, and this has provided an opportunity to reset with what does work and say this piece was a good idea, but it really did not work. So we're very excited to move forward with what's happened coming out of the work group. The one thing I would say that Senator Roblin didn't mention is the work group will continue to meet.
Yes.
So because it has our key agencies and stakeholders involved in it, so even as the sunset gets removed, we still want to keep this group engaged until I think the group feels like it doesn't need to be engaged anymore. And we think that's a good way to bring all the stakeholders to the table.
So the plan for the new makeup of the board, that would happen in the 16 session a year from now?
I would say that my feeling right now is we're going to let the governor do her executive order to give some input into that.
But it'll require legislative approval.
And then at the end of the day, by next session, we will decide, because one of the conversations is, does it need a board? Or is it just an agency? Because there's boards at every other level. So does it need a board? The other part of the conversation is, should the board be made up of members of each of the other boards? If it's a coordinating factor, maybe that's who should make up the board, as opposed to others, a totally different group of people who aren't getting the same information from each
other. And so we'll get a recommendation from the governor by the 16th session.
We'll get before that. We will put, she will implement a group of people right at the end with an executive order to work with Nancy.
Okay.
And then we'll look at that makeup and see, is that the right makeup or do we need a board? And that's the legislation.
Will that happen during the interim or?
Yes, in the interim.
While we're still in this session.
And through the next sessions. When we make a final legislative fix, it'll be in the next short session.
16.
That's the hope.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair, anything? Okay.
Thank you.
Well, it sounds like we're moving in the right direction.
Think
that's
so.
Good. Yeah. Mr. Fisher, come on up.
Oh, okay.
We finally found you.
Chair Monroe, Chair Comp, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association, trying to balance a staff phone call at the same time. And appreciate you waiting. Here to testify in support of the OEIB budget. I think it's really the first time in Oregon's history that we've had, kind of one place that you can go to for everything regarding education, from birth to college and career. You've seen a number of their policy option packages that we are very supportive of. They're doing incredible work. We're very supportive of continuing it, and we're here to urge your support for their budget. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Fisher? Thank you very much. So we will not meet tomorrow, Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
Could we ask Dr. Golden to come for
Dr.
One
Golden
more
time? Will come on back.
And this may not be a question for Dr. Golden, or maybe nobody knows the answer at this time, but I know it's big on a lot of people's mind is the process that the and I don't know who's going to coordinate the process for replacing the deputy superintendent.
Yeah.
So, co-chairs, thank you for the question, because obviously it's a very important piece. So I've been working with Lindsay, and through Lindsay with the governor, I've proposed a process where basically we would really look around the state or beyond for some of the best candidates and really bring four or five forward that we would interview very specifically around what we see as the critical aspects of the role. We know that we're trying to have a process that moves as quickly as possible for a few reasons. One is that one group of people have been suggesting names to me, and one of the groups that you most see are some of the outstanding superintendents currently in districts. Well, I know as a school superintendent, after a certain time in the year, as much as you might want to do a job like this, you can't leave your school district because of your commitments to them and the vision. So we're trying to get the balance between doing it fast so that if we have someone like that who we think should be considered, but also knowing we need to use a good process.
A follow-up?
Go ahead.
Who do you think is going to be on the interview team, or will there be multiple interviews and all that? I want you to drill down a little bit.
So that's actually one of the steps in the work plan I put together was to say decide on who's going to be on the interview team. So that is not decided. I mean, I think some of the people we think about are someone like, from the governor's office, and probably someone like Ben Cannon, who's part of the people along the pathway, and then whoever else the governor wants. If you have suggestions, we're more than willing to listen to them.
Any discussion of having a legislator or two on that?
We haven't talked about specifically who, but I can certainly mention that. I think that'd be a great idea.
Might be smart.
Absolutely, it would be.
Or treacherous.
Madam Co-Chair?
It might be very treacherous also.
Of course. Of course, but that's why we get the big bucks, right?
Right.
Thank you.
Anything else for Nancy?
No.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wilson?
Well, members, you did well. You have the day off tomorrow. Wednesday is the official end of phase one, and it's the continuation of public university testimony. It's the only thing on the agenda because there were a number of pages left, as I understand it. We'll see how many show up of those folks. And then Thursday, there will be work sessions on the Board of Dentistry and the health-related licensing boards.
Good. And I believe, Madam Co-Chair, you and I have a meeting tomorrow with Lindsay.
Yes.
I'm not sure when it is.
Well, since we don't have a committee, we might check with his team if they might want to meet at 8:30 instead of 7:45 or something like that.
8:30 sounds good to me.
If Doug can help us facilitate that.
Billy, if you're watching this, schedule us at 8:30. Anything else? Well, thank you very much. And Senator Roblin in particular, thank you for your good work on the OEIB. I've been worried about the future of the OEIB this whole session, and it sounds like we're moving in the right direction.
Rep Taylor's one of the most seminal people. She's at every meeting.
Anything further?
She's at every meeting.
Anything further?